May 6th Senate Finance Committee meeting will come to order. We have three bills on the agenda, and we're starting out with Senator Wicklund's health-related licensure bill. And Dennis is not here, so Eric will help us with the spreadsheet. But welcome, and go ahead on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're seeing Senate File 4570, which is a health-related licensing and scope policy omnibus bill. We had a concerted effort in the HHS committee this session to take up and examine and hear many of the health professional licensing related bills. We had more bills than we could possibly hear this session in that area. There were, I think, close to 30 or more bills that had that focus. So we tried to vet them to bring forward the ones that were ready for us to take up, and had stakeholder involvement, and so we made an assessment about which ones were ready to come forward in our committee. What you see before you is a bill that contains, I think there are bills related to, I think, 16 different professional areas, ranging anywhere from the funeral director area, where we have a bill to implement a new position called transfer care specialist, all the way to, we also have a couple bills that were related to veterinarians, because that is also within the scope of my committee. And so there's a wide range of professions that are affected by this bill. And also the point of many of the bills is to help us expand access, either access to care or access for providers to be able to move around in their fields in different states through the compact bills. We are hoping that these provisions will address healthcare workforce shortage issues by making it easier for professionals to either come to Minnesota or to get access to a different certain profession. And also considering, taking into consideration how we want to address safety for the public, for members of the public, by making sure that our regulation is protective and trying to address areas where we are currently lacking regulation where we should have it. For example, in the area of behavioral analysis, currently there's no licensing process for behavior analysts, and it was felt that this group works with people of different ages and their vulnerable situations, and not having some form of licensure is really is not the best way to make sure that we have a good, consistent profession that's regulated and there's some accountability. There are many different smaller provisions, and then there are seven compact bills. We vetted those in the HHS committee. They also had a lot of vetting in the Judiciary Committee to address concerns that were raised about some of the language that was kind of through all of the compacts. And that work resulted in compromise language that was put into all of the compacts and then moved forward. And I'm not sure how much detail you want me to go into, but you do have the spreadsheet. All of the funds are from the special SGSR. There is no general fund impact to this bill, and you can see laid out all of the different either boards or the Department of Health that have to deal with the actual funding provisions.
Before Mr. Hellman walks through the spreadsheet quickly, is there any questions from members? If not, Mr. Nauman, can you go quickly walk us through this?
So, Mr. Chair and members, Senator Wicklund has already given you the high points that I was probably going to hit. I'll maybe just reference that on line 11, you can see the net total, actually line 11 as well as line 13, the net total change in the bill. And I'm working off the spreadsheet that Senator Wicklund referenced earlier, shows that there's a $971,000 total effect from this bill to the SGSR. And members are well acquainted that when you have a regulated profession and there are fees imposed, they get deposited in the SGSR, and then those get appropriated back out. So that's what you're seeing as is changes associated with those various professional changes that are occurring in the bill. If there are specific questions, whenever, I won't do a typical Mr. Albrecht walkthrough, but I will just highlight for you that whenever you see REV and under the column BACT, that's a revenue change, and any of the other numbers indicate a spending change. So there's a whole series of detail underneath the spreadsheet, and I think for your purposes, Senator, that's probably sufficient.
Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we can get a little more a detail around the increase in 2025 that seems to mitigate itself in the tails.
Mr. Nowen.
So, for example, Mr. Nowen, on line 11, we see $971,000 in fiscal 25, but then $373 and $157. In each of the subsequent fiscal years. And
yes, Mr. Chair, and I may leave that to Senator Wicklund. I'm not sure the exact dynamics that are producing those numerical adjustments over time.
Senator Wicklund.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I think that what I believe is happening is that some of the boards have implementation costs that result from, like, implementing the compacts, and so there's probably more in the beginning and then that probably is less in the out years, because they would be doing more work initially and then there wouldn't be as much.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if this is for implementation costs, I'm kind of wondering why we don't have a fiscal note that would detail those costs.
Mr. Nowen.
There are fiscal notes for all of these bills. We don't have them all here, but there are fiscal notes available for all of them.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Wicklund's point, Senator Pratt, think about this as an accumulation the way you would in an omnibus bill. So certainly, if there's any specific item, we can pull that fiscal note for you. But this was Mr. Albrecht's attempt to pull things together all in one location.
Any other questions or discussion? Senator Dames, is your hand up or no? Okay. Any other discussion? If not, Senator Wicklund moves House File 4247 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Thick bill. We next have Senator Champion, Senate File 716, the Minnesota African American Family Preservation Act, or AAFPA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present again the African American Family Preservation Act and Child Welfare Disproportionality Act. As you know, just for clarity, this bill is a part of the Health and Human Services bill. We do have a delete all. The delete all just really represents all that was that's already in the Health and Human Services bill. But then there are a couple small changes that we like to talk to you about or tell you about. It has no fiscal impact, and they're a direct result of talking to stakeholders and DHS and others in order just to make sure that we're crafting the language so that it's really consistent. So just remember that this bill establishes the Minnesota African American Family Preservation Act. It also codifies the office of the African American Child Welfare Oversight Council and the Wellbeing Unit. And this codifies that, but it also outlines definitions that apply to the act. But the whole idea is to really make sure that we are addressing the challenges in the child protection area. I move and ask that the body accepts the A6, and I'll also have counsel at the right time just talk about the differences between the HHS and this, because they're small changes, and I just like for you to know that there's nothing that has any other fiscal impact. Sure. So with that, I move the A6, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. So the A6 reflects what was in the omnibus bill plus a handful of little changes.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman, you look like you were. I was going to say, is it okay? Can we take this up now, or do members have questions about any of the changes or anything?
And if there are any questions about the small changes, yeah. Council is prepared to go through those small hand.
Yes, Ms. Hoffman Leach is here if we have any questions. Do you want to go through the little changes quickly, just so people are aware of what they are, since they were not considered by the committee yet?
Sure thing. Mr. Chair, members, the few changes that were made include removing the two mentions of emotional damage from the language. They are not defined in the bill and therefore are hard to implement or hard to know what they mean. There were a few technical changes updating internal cross-references that staff missed in the HHS omnibus bill. The appropriations section has been added as section 22 on page 23. The pilot programs language has been updated to be called a phase-in program, which better reflects the intent of the authors and the bill. And then there were some changes to, emergency removal language on page 8, starting on line 10. It just has some modified language. A few sentences were added to reflect discussions with stakeholders and DHS. And then section 8 on page 9, starting at line 18, was also slightly modified to add just a few other clarifying changes. And those are pretty much all that's been changed.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members of the committee? If not, Senator, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll identify that there is a fiscal note in your packet titled Senate File 4699 to 42A. These are the same numbers that were used when the HHS bill was considered. The only difference between the fiscal note and what's actually being appropriated in the DE is that the family preservation grants have tails on them, so that there is $1 million ongoing, excuse me, in the appropriation that is not in the fiscal note. This is consistent with what was done in the Health and Human Services bill and also reflects the target adjustment for the Health and Human Services Committee.
Thank you. Is there any questions from members of the committee? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Senator Champion, for bringing the bill forward. Can you explain the FTEs on this? It looks like it goes from 6 and 25 and then 18 and 26 and 18 and 27. Can you just kind of give us a quick rundown?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Dreheim, for that question. It really reflects the phase-in of the program itself. There are some things that are already being done by the department. And with doing this phase-in with Hennepin and Ramsey County, there's also been other counties that have asked to be a part of that phase-in that we'll consider that next year. And so just really making sure that they have the support that they need. Now, one of the things that we did talk about is that because this is a program or an act that's being implemented now, there's a reason why we also have a work group that layers over it, that is filled with representatives from AMC, the DHS, Hennepin, Ramsey County, and a community organization, so we can continue to adjust those things. So the FTEs are what we believe is needed, but it may go down. And so that's the only reason for the...
Sir Dringham, in other words, there are more counties being added in. So further discussion? Senator Champion, you had moved the A6 amendment. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion, do you have anything else you want to... Senate Council, either anybody have any more? Okay. If not, is there any more discussion on the bill? If not, Senator Champion moves that Senate File 716 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee.
We are going to have a brief recess because the fiscal notes are being printed as we speak, and they were going to be distributed right now, and we did not know we'd get through those two bills as fast as we did. So we will take a recess to the call of the chair, which I'm guessing will be 5 minutes. Thank you. The Senate Finance Committee, May 6th, will come back to order. We have one bill remaining on the agenda, and now we have the bill and the latest fiscal note in the packets. We had the House fiscal note posted, which was identical, but it was the House one, so we had to get the Senate one. Senator Seeberger, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee with the EMS legislation, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm very pleased to be here on Senate File 4835, which is my EMS department initiative. I've spoken about it before in various other scenarios and settings, but what it does is it establishes, it reorganizes the governing authority for emergency medical services within the state of Minnesota in response to a couple of OLA audits that found significant challenges and difficulties with the existing governing board. But the financial piece here, well, that's a small part of the financial piece. The other piece is the pilot program, which establishes two innovation zones in the state of Minnesota, one being on the range and one being in Otter Tail County, to provide a sprint medic service to augment emergency medical care, pre-hospital care that's already existing in those areas of the state, providing a faster, higher level of care to patients in those areas. The cost of that program is $3 million per year. That is something that was specifically in the governor's budget. And the additional cost of the restructuring of the governing board is around $216,000 per year. If anyone wants further information on what my bill does, I'm happy to talk at great length. However, I will entertain any questions or discussion the members might have.
Thank you, Senator Seeberger. I just had one question about the Sprint Medic program, and how much time does that tend to cut off between when, I mean, is there an average? Because obviously sometimes it may not be any faster, sometimes far faster. Do you know what typical time would be in those regions of the state and what this might do to it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thanks. That's a great question. And you're right, it can be almost no time savings, or it can be up to 20 or 30 minutes. And if you think about it in terms of our police force, so let's say we had a volunteer police force. And so our police officers were out doing their day jobs, their other normal jobs. A call would come in, they would have to leave their day job, go to the station, put on their uniform, get in their squad, wait for their partner, and then go to the call. If they're close by, maybe they can get dispatched and onto the call really quickly. If they're not close by and it takes a minute, if they're at, you know, the grocery store grocery shopping and they have to abandon their cart and drive back to the station and get in, which I've had to do, that's how we do our emergency medical services. So what the Sprint Medic will be, that person will be a full-time medic. They will be a paramedic, and I think this is an important point too. They are advanced life-saving trained to that level, an ALS training versus a BLS, a basic life-saving training, which are our Greater Minnesota Volunteer Ambulances. And the data shows that getting quicker ALS care to a patient dramatically increases the chance for a positive outcome for that patient. So it's not only saving time to get to the patient, maybe getting there 30 minutes sooner than the ambulance could have gotten there, but it's providing a higher level of care while we wait for the BLS ambulance to be on scene. So we have a couple of different benefits, and I think the patients will benefit from having not only a quicker response, but a higher level of care once the provider arrives.
Thank you. And the other, I guess, second question is on the EMS board, whatever you're calling the office or whatever now. When does that take effect?
The that's an excellent question. I believe January 1, 2025 is when that will take effect. So the sooner the better.
Good. And Mr. Nauman, are you going to go through the fiscal note for us?
Mr. Chair, members, I was just thumbing through to make sure that nothing had changed. this is all general fund. And the EMS services office that is proposed in the bill is the primary cost driver. And as Senator Seeberger indicated, there's a pilot project a little over $6 million is assumed, with some ongoing costs for some personnel costs into fiscal 27 and beyond. The legislature flags some additional cost, very small, just assumed to be per diem for membership on the board. So, Mr. Chair, on page 19 of the bill, it's worth highlighting that the targets that were established by leadership and the executive set aside $16 million total one time, and this is six of that. And so that money is appropriated in fiscal 25 and made available into fiscal 26.
And
maybe, Mr. Chair, to clarify that point, this would pay for the three and three over the two fiscal years, because it's appropriated on a one-time basis but then made available for a longer period of time. So the assumption is that the costs would be paid for three in fiscal 25 and three in 26.
And Senator Seberg, if the Sprint program is spread statewide to all the places that the volunteer services, how ballpark estimate, how much is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not remembering that number. I know I heard it at one point. I want to say in the ballpark of $150 million, but I'm not, don't hold me to that. We are looking at various funding sources for that, working with some stakeholders that have been thinking about this for a long time and have an idea of how to do that. So that's in the works. That's sort of a down the line issue. This pilot program is really to gather data so that informs our rolling out of this system statewide in the future, if it looks like it's going to work as well as I think it will.
And you are continuing to work on this. I've heard from you and others, I think.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. This is this bill that I'm bringing, the bills that are that have come to before us here this session, is just the beginning of our work. We have a lot more work to do, but that we're kind of teeing ourselves up and continuing to work on how we deliver pre-hospital care in the state of Minnesota here. And I think we are going to be a leader in the nation when it comes to this. The challenges that EMS is facing in Minnesota are not unique to this state. They're nationwide. And every state has been struggling with the same problems we're seeing here. So we're really getting out in front of the issue, and I'm really pleased with how we've been able to begin our work and begin to put into place certain systems and innovation zones to try to tackle the problem, make some advancements within the provision of pre-hospital care, and I look forward to being before this committee and others in coming sessions with additional initiatives and ways that we can improve upon our system.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Seberger, I didn't see in the bill where you identified where the two Sprint innovation zones were going to be. I was wondering if you could point me to that.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, that language is not in the bill as it stands. It will be amended to include Otter Tail County and certain counties on the range specifically. I'm working in tandem with the other body to make the changes as needed. That is something that I know was requested by Senator Rasmussen, and I believe he will have an amendment on the floor to add to that, which I will not oppose, and there will be a similar amendment to specify that the other Sprint Medic model will be developed in the range area.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of curious why we know what the amendment's going to be, but we don't have it in front of us.
Senator Seberg, is that because the two authors wanted to present it on the floor, or is it because it just wasn't ready yet, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pratt, a little bit of both. We didn't, when we developed this idea and developed this program, it wasn't front of mind that we needed to specifically spell it out, because we've been working with the different regions already. So Perham Ambulance is spun up and ready to go. I believe it's either Hibbing or another range agency spun up and ready to go. So we've been working with those agencies. They're ready to go. It doesn't need to be spelled out in the bill, but I think for comfort language, we discovered that folks would like that. So we're going to do it, spell it out in the bill, even though we really don't need to because the agencies are ready to go.
Further questions? Senator Westrom, you unmuted for a while. Did you have a question? No. Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Seeberger.
Excuse me, Senator Dames. Senator Westrom, did you have a question?
Well, am I muted now, Mr. Chair? Because it tells me I'm now unmuted, and before I was told I was muted. So maybe I'm not muted ever.
Okay, no, you've been muted most of the time, so you did not have a question. So, okay, back to Senator Dames.
I'm sorry. No, I did not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Seeberger. I think the EMS request was around $120 million, and the governor, as I remember, put $16 million into his budget, and I think you're talking of taking roughly $3 million a year for the next 2 years out for, so that's going to leave $9 million. Do you know, are there other areas that we're going to be putting money into the EMS this year?
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dames, the answer is yes, I do know. And I'll explain what the plan is there. The $120 million request came from a number that includes not only actual losses sustained by some EMS agencies, but the value of volunteer service as well. As you know, a lot of our EMS agencies run on volunteers or paid on call members who provide time free, their unpaid time for the readiness necessary to be able to staff an ambulance. That the value of that time was built into that $122 million number. So it's not an actual loss, which is why I've had a problem with that number all along, because it doesn't represent the true emergency need of emergency medical services throughout Greater Minnesota, which are the ones that we see losing money. That being said, the idea always has been to take the $16 million and use the $6 for the pilot program and then the $10 for the emergency aid, which I'm hopeful we'll get more than $10. But as it stands, there is some money that's going to go to agencies that really need it the most. And Senator Rasmussen has done an excellent job in identifying and creating a formula to try to really target those agencies so that we know who will get that money, what the amount will be, and how it will get distributed, which was the other problem I had with the $122 million. The bill did not specify how it would be determined, who would get it, how much, when, who would distribute it. So I'm grateful to Senator Rasmussen for taking that initiative and really piecing that out so that we know who will get what. And the other piece here is last session we distributed $300 million to every single city, county, and tribal nation here within the state of Minnesota for public safety, which includes EMS. So we've been, I think, as a legislature, focusing on this issue at least for the last two sessions and have provided agencies with a significant amount of funds, and we're going to continue to do that. But I think what we need to do is we need to rethink how EMS is delivered, how we reimburse and fund our ambulances so that we're not continuing to operate at a loss, because it's really not our job as a legislator to keep plugging a hole every session when what we really need to do is rethink how we bill for, reimburse, pay for ambulance service.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Seeberger. So can you give me an idea what the actual value would be once you've taken off the value of the volunteer hours? Any idea what that actual value would be?
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Dames. No, I can't.
Okay.
It varies. In addition, some agencies have true fiscal losses. Some are manipulating numbers on the books to appear to have a loss. So it's difficult for me, for anybody, to really identify which agencies have the most true need and which don't.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Seeberger. If you use the numbers that were given to you, this $122 million, if you would take the actual value of the volunteer labor out of there, what would that number be?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Ames. I believe the number that I've seen that represents the value of readiness as it relates to volunteer departments, I want to say it's in the $60 to $70 million range. I could be wrong, but it's significant. And for example, I do it myself. I'm on my local fire department. We're paid on call. So my obligation is to sign on for 2 8-hour overnight shifts every month. That's unpaid. And because I live far enough away from the fire station that I can't get there real quick, especially in the middle of the night when I got to wake up and take a minute before I drive in my car, I spend the night down at the station. Sure. So I sleep at the station in my uniform for no pay. And that's the value of the readiness that, that paid on call and volunteer fire departments provide throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Seeberger, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, Senator Seeberger, and I believe Mr. Ferguson from EMSRB is here if there are questions, I think. I don't know if Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and kind of interesting. I don't know if Mr. Ferguson will step up for this question. I'm curious, we've eliminated the ESRB and replacing it with this new government agency that's going to cost us $6 million to set up. I'm curious, weren't there any cost savings from the transition from ESRB that would play into this?
Mr. Ferguson, welcome to committee. Please identify yourself and then go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dylan Ferguson. I serve as the executive director for the Minnesota Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. Senator Pratt, to your question, as it relates specifically to the $6 million, I will highlight that those are not costs that are specifically related to the setting up of a new governmental agency. Rather, that $6 million is specifically earmarked for the purposes of trying a new service delivery model, or at least new to the state of Minnesota. This bill, as it's presented, is a confluence of different EMS policy initiatives, of which the organizational structure is one, and of which the new service delivery model pilot grants are another. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Pratt, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it doesn't really answer my question about the savings from the ESRB.
Yes, were there savings from when the EMSRB is being transferred to this office? Is that cost the same, more or less, do you know?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt. As it relates to specifically to the fiscal note regarding those costs, I believe that the concept that was presented was that there would be some minor cost savings related predominantly to per diems of the board, and also as it relates to the proposed costs, that pursuant to Minnesota statute, the way that state agencies are transferred, all of the classified and unclassified staff would transfer from the existing Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board to the new entity pursuant to, 15.032 of a transfer of state agencies. I do think that because there was the, which was not the EMSRB's projection, but is identified in sections of the fiscal note, that there would not have to be a significant number of full-time equivalents added due to the fact of the existing staff in place. Senator Pratt.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Any further discussion? If not, Senator Friends moves it. Senator Westrom, you had.
Mr. Chair, yeah, a quick question if I could.
Go ahead.
So, Mr. Chair, kind of on the same lines as Senator Pratt had a question, just long term, what do you anticipate the pilot projects to gain or benefit us, especially in rural communities? I mean, what's the goal? Is it money savings or just going to cost a little more but better, more rapid service? If Mr. Ferguson or Senator Seeberger can answer that. I just kind of want to know what the benchmarks and what are we really going to get?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Westrom, what we're seeing in Greater Minnesota right now are delays in arriving to a patient, delays in getting that patient to a hospital, resulting in people becoming sicker, people dying, because we simply don't have the staff to have a full-time ambulance service everywhere. So what the Sprint Medic model is intended to do, and what we've seen in other states, we're not the first state to do this, is that when you have somebody that can immediately dispatch and get to the scene where a patient needs care, getting there sooner improves the outcome. Providing a higher level of care sooner improves the outcome. A paramedic can deliver medications. A paramedic can do minor surgical procedures. A paramedic can do a lot on the scene to help stabilize a patient or deliver immediate care that an EMT on a BLS ambulance simply cannot do. So providing that care immediately at the scene, rather than having the patient wait an hour or more to get to a hospital to receive that care, can dramatically improve the outcome to a patient. The other piece of this equation is if the paramedic gets on the scene and it's not actually a call that needs a transport, they can cancel the ambulance, thereby freeing up that resource for another call. So just this one piece, adding one single person, a Sprint Medic, to be able to deliver this care immediately and at a higher level can significantly improve outcomes, and we've seen that in other states.
Further questions, Senator Westrom?
So, Mr. Chair, and just Senator Seeberger, thank you. So, all in all, it'll probably cost us more money, but the idea is a more rapid response system, or do you anticipate eventually it being similar money, just better use or better spent money? If you got that, I'll mute, Mr. Chair, that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Westrom, no, it's going to cost more money. And as I indicated before, we are looking at revenue sources. That's part of the work of the EMS task force, is to figure out how do we fund this. Right now, ambulances operate at a loss. They don't get reimbursed if they don't transport. There's a lot of areas where the reimbursement doesn't match up with the services provided. So it will cost money. The idea is, where do we find that money? But I think, you know, just like we wouldn't want a part-time police force, that's money well spent to pay for our law enforcement to protect and serve the people of Minnesota. I think that ambulance services, I think folks really deserve the same when it comes to EMS care. So where does that money come from? How are we going to fund it? I don't know that answer yet. I'm working with various people to come up with something that would make sense. But no, it will cost more money in the future, but I think the folks in Minnesota deserve that.
Further discussion, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, maybe just more on a more general basis. I think it's disappointing that we're putting $16 million towards this, given that we had a $19 billion budget surplus last year. It feels like, and you know, as Senator Dame said originally, you know, we believed that this was going to be a $120 million program. Maybe there are some savings, Senator Seeberger. I don't know, but the fact that we're pulling out, you know, $6 million, about 40% of the funding, just for staff, a new executive director, and spreading $10 million across the rest of the state. When in our rural communities, people are really hurting. The response times are dangerous. I mean, I'm glad to see these two innovation zones, but I think there needs to be, there should have been a bigger, more substantial commitment from this body, from the governor, to this issue. I know Senator Lang has spoken in length about it, and it just feels like we've misaligned our priorities. We haven't funded our values, and I wish we could have done more.
Further discussion, Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Seeberger. In a couple of your comments here, you mentioned transport only. Do you have any, do you have any statistics or any idea what percentage in rural Minnesota? You know, there's a lot of cities that don't have taxis, they don't have Uber and Lyft, and so many a times, as I understand, they'll call emergency folks and have them take them to the drugstore, take them to the hospital. Do you have any idea how prevalent that really is?
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Dames. I do. An ambulance wouldn't take somebody to the drugstore. An ambulance can only transport to the emergency department. But you hit on one of the issues spot on. A lot of folks either wait to seek medical care because they don't have adequate transportation, and then the problem gets worse to the extent where they need an ambulance, where if we could have addressed it further upstream, we would have prevented that necessity of having to call an ambulance. Or they call for an ambulance because they need a prescription refilled or they need a primary care visit, and an ambulance ride to the emergency department is the only way that they can do that. We have become a safety net for the folks in Minnesota who have no other way to get primary care or some other services that they need. And that is a real issue, not just in greater Minnesota, but in the metro as well. As you know, I work as a paramedic on a 911 ambulance service, and I can't tell you the number of times that we do act as a safety net for folks. My vision as we continue this work is to be able to address those needs upstream, to be able to, my vision is to take the Sprint Medic model and deploy it across the state of Minnesota, and not only will these medics respond as 911 medics, but they can also serve as community paramedics as well, who can visit these folks in their homes and deliver care, whether it's through telemedicine or other ways, so that the patient can receive care in their home rather than have to use emergency medical services and an emergency department for non-emergency care. So that's my vision. That's where I hope we get, but that's going to be a long process to get there. It's not something we can do right away in one session. We need to build out to that. So part of the hope for the Sprint Medic model is to gather the data that we need in these two innovation zones to be able to inform our development of a statewide system to begin really improving, and I mean it when I say it, improving pre-hospital care to everybody in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Seeberger.
Further discussion. Senator Seeberger, yes, thanks for the ongoing work on this. I think that, remember that hearing that we didn't even have good numbers on what was going on until the last year or two, and Director Ferguson has apparently gotten things more efficiently going. So, but I think we have a lot more learning to do, so appreciate the ongoing nature of this work. Is there further discussion? If not, Senator Muhammad moves Senate file 4835 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And with that, we finish today's agenda. Just to let members know, we are meeting at 8:30 on Wednesday to deal with Senate File 4985, which I believe is the policy related changes for related to the Tyler versus Hennepin. We heard the finance portion of that, the settlement for the previous problem, but for ongoing to make sure we're complying with the Supreme Court ruling, that language will be heard on 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Friday at 9 a.m. we'll probably be dealing with paid family medical leave, and there are still obviously some other bills such as bonding we have not been had scheduled yet, but we'll be meeting presumably on Wednesday at 8:30 and then Friday at 9. If there is no further discussion, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.